Hey Potters, welcome to episode 104 of Cospod, the podcast for all things cosplay. We're almost at the end of 2015.
Yay! It's moving by too quickly. It needs to like slow down.
New year. Because this past year has not been the most fantastic.
It has its ups and downs. There's been some bad things, but there's been some good things too. It balances. It's better than last year.
That is true.
Last year really sucked.
So you can see I'm wearing gloves because it is chilly out here in Texas. It has been chillier than normal. And we don't know how to deal with cold out here at all.
We're not supposed to know how to deal with cold. We live here to be warm.
Texas does not get cold. Until now. Apparently.
Until now. We've had really weird weather this year, though, so it's not surprising. And heck, I mean, what we've got like the wettest year on record after this last weekend.
Yep, and we've still got the rest of the month to go, and it's still, they're saying we're actually supposed to potentially have a white Christmas this year.
I don't know if I can handle that. I got too much stuff to do at work.
So if anybody in Texas has those snow-based cosplays, be digging them out of the closet in the next week or two. So you can do photo shoots with actual snow.
Mine's not done yet. It's still a work in progress.
Can it hold off? 2 weeks.
I am not going to have time to embroider all that in 1 to 2 weeks. There is no way.
I'll politely ask Mother Nature to kind of hold back on the snow just a little bit.
Mid-January.
Oh, we'll get some then, too, and February and March.
And March.
Oh, of course.
Head down.
Of course, everybody who lives in snowy climes is just like, yeah, it's just snow. We don't get it here.
They don't understand. Ice. Yeah, here's the thing. The snow we get here is actually sleet. It's more of an icy mixture, not really the nice white powdery stuff. Though we did get some earlier this year. That was nice. So nice. But it was sitting on top of like a good 3 to 4 inches of solid ice. Yeah, that's the problem. It's not the snow. It's the ice. And it sucks so hard.
Mother Nature built us a personal freezer on our lawns and then piled powdery snow on top of it.
So it's very unassuming.
Yeah. Fantastic if you have really warm cosplays and want to go out and take pictures in it.
Right?
I mean, if you're going to do photo shoots, generally you end up having to do them either if you have free time between cons or in the downtime, because con season doesn't go generally 365 for everybody. Everybody generally has maybe a month or two down between, you know, segments of cons. So, of course, this is the time of year when you can get photo shoots done most easily. It's also the time of year when everybody is the most busy.
Yeah. Holidays. Woo.
Yes. At least up here in the Northern Hemisphere, I know our Southern Hemisphere folks are not celebrating Christmas at the moment, or at least not the same way that we do up here with the snow and the cold and everything else. So a little bit different, but no, if you're looking to get those done before end of year, I know there are photographers offering some decent deals and even some giveaways right now on free photo shoots, especially since IckyCon is coming up.
As well as a bunch of other conventions at other various parts of the country.
Indeed. All right, cosplay updates. I understand you have something in the background you've been working on.
I've been working on, this has been my pet project for the week. For those who don't know, I've been crazy and I decided I wanted to do applique of velvet on top of velvet. And for those of you who don't know, that's a really difficult process and it can be very cumbersome and time consuming. This basically took me the entire weekend and this is only two portions of a sleeve. I have so much more to do. It's not even funny. So yeah, this is what my project has been for the past 2 days. And I've spent the week working on Photoshop files of the character so I could flatten out the image as best as I possibly could so I wouldn't have to kind of finagle it with my really crappy drawing skills. Because I have really crappy drawing skills. I can do stick figures really nice, though. I am great at stick figures. Amber's laughing at me because it's probably true. So yeah, this has been my pet project for the week. It's going to take me a little while longer. I'm hoping to have some of this applique insanity done by next weekend. Who knows? I have to get this sucker done by PAX South. This is my big project for it. It's taking forever. I'm sadly crying on the inside. It's going to be so pretty when it's done, though, because it looks so nice and great. And my weird technique for getting the applique to work is so far working. it's sitting so well and there's no stitching on it so far. So that's kind of crazy. I'll probably end up doing a tutorial on how to do this later on because it's just such a cool thing to learn. Chances of you using velvet on top of velvet's probably pretty slim. But in case you want to know, I'll make a tutorial for it. The other thing that I have done this week is I'm working with Causebox. They're having a charity starting on Thursday is when they started. It's going through till pretty much the end of the month. They are working with the National Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and you can donate to Causebox directly. You can buy one of their boxes for the month, or you can buy a raffle ticket, and all the proceeds are going to go directly to the foundation. So I was like, that's kind of cool. So they asked me if I had anything to donate, so I made some really cool geeky infinity scarves that I'm giving away. It's like $20, $25 scarves. They're, you know, infinity scarves are not cheap to make. So I've made those, I've donated them, and they're being raffled off right now. So if you guys are looking for some really cool geeky wear this season for the holidays, even for yourself, if you want to stash them for yourself, because, I mean, who wouldn't want a Donkey Kong scarf? I mean, let's be honest. Who wouldn't want one? Or a Star Wars one? You can go ahead and buy a raffle ticket. It's only 10 bucks, and it's not just the scarf, but you'll get like a good like goodie prize. Like there's a bunch of things in the package. So there you go. That's what I've been doing this week is making scarves for charity and on that insanity that makes me want to cry.
On the inside.
On the inside, yeah. Not on the outside. If I cried on this, I wouldn't be able to fix it. I have to start all over. Oh, God. Yeah. No.
There are some cosplayers who literally put blood, sweat, and tears into their costumes. You can watch the panel from ANT that we filmed that's Cosplay Horror Stories. There are examples of this, of mm-hmm. very, very literal blood being put into costumes. Not intentionally, of course.
It's all on accident.
Right. So generally, we try not to advocate doing that.
God, no. If I did that on this poor baby, I would cry literally. I would realistically cry because this thing is all white and silver. I cannot do that. Unless I start bleeding sparkles, that's just not going to happen. Ugh, given how pale I am, I'm probably part vampire anyway, so.
Team Edward.
I'm more of a Nosferatu, less of an Edward. So what have you been up to, Amber?
So you may notice behind me the lack of things. My cosplay update has been very physical in many senses because I'm moving next Friday out of my house into a new apartment. Yay.
Yay.
After many hangups, many hiccups in the process, including having to get a new apartment at the last minute because the complex messed up. But it's all sorted out, so I am now finally putting all of my badges and stuff into boxes so I can safely transport it over to my new place. So I am still in the process of disassembling furniture and carefully putting cosplay away into boxes for transport, because that's one of the things you have to worry about when you're moving is getting your cosplay to your new place in one piece, not many pieces, and certainly not broken pieces. So those are going to go in my car personally. I am moving my cosplay, not the moving guys. But the other thing is that, I noticed that I have gained quite a bit of weight in the last few months. You can't necessarily see it because you don't see me in person. And even in person, I don't look that big, but I need to lose about 20 pounds, actually. So I have been almost literally trying to work my butt off at the gym, hardcore, over my lunch hour at work, to try and slim back down for cosplay season upcoming, because right now, you know, body image aside, because anybody can cosplay whatever they want, and I have no problems with this. I support it 110%. Me personally, I have a duct tape dummy that I use for my patterning, and right now I am not the size of the duct tape dummy. So if I expect to still be able to use it to make patterns, I need to slim back down to the size of my duct tape dummy. Otherwise, I have to make a new one, which is really hard because I don't live near anybody at the moment. I live in the middle of nowhere. That will change soon. But until then, you know, plus for my own health and well-being, because working out at the gym has actually really helped me mentally since I've effectively been medically depressed for the last couple of months. So it's kind of helping me cope with that. So, you know, that's pretty much been what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks is frantically packing and frantically working out at the gym. and trying to cut things out of my diet that I probably shouldn't have, like soft drinks and ice cream.
That
I miss
help.
My ice cream so much. I miss it hard. It's in my freezer and I haven't touched it since I swore off soda at least until the new year minimum. So that's at least a month of just cold turkey, no soda. And I have no idea when I'm going to touch the ice cream. Maybe a little treat at Christmas and that's it, because ice cream will keep forever. But other than that, it's just like, nope, got to have that willpower, man. Got to drive myself. It's for the sake of my cosplay and my health.
As I say, and maybe you don't want Val to make another duct tape dummy of you again, because that was very entertaining for me. I don't know about you.
Well, my hair is a little shorter, so I'm not as worried about having my hair chopped off. The only problem is that I don't have any shirts I need to sacrifice anymore. And that's kind of the problem, is I'd have to go out and buy a new shirt. And considering the sieve that has been my checkbook and will be for the next 2 weeks as I pay all of my moving expenses and having to buy new mattresses and everything else, yeah, I don't need to be spending any more money than I absolutely have to.
Understand completely.
Although, I have noticed that, you know, if you, the Potters, are looking to stock up on supplies and you're willing to shop online, a lot of the fabric stores are running their best sales of the year right now. So if you need to stock up on anything, even just the basics, things like muslin, broadcloth, things that you can just pattern with outright, notions, making sure that you have nice sharp scissors for the new year for your fabric that you only use for fabric. Making sure you have nice sharp needles for your sewing machine, because those do wear down if you did not know. So just little things like that. Now would be the time to go ahead and replace them. And you can always, you know, put on your Santa list, and putting aside Santa philosophically, on your wish list, you can always put gift cards to your favorite places like fabric.com, like Joann's, like Michael's. Places that you can use those online so that you don't necessarily have to have one near you. But you can have them ship it to you. And it can be worth it, and you'll save quite a bit of money that way. So, you know, if you're looking just for little things to replace, now's probably a good time to do it.
Not to mention, it's been like wig sale crazy. Usually all the places I love to go to. I've stocked up on almost all my wigs for next year already.
Actually, today I just got my package in from Epic Cosplay from the Black Friday sale.
Nice.
I used the gift card that I won from them, and I got the extensions, which, Potter, something for you guys to look forward to. Val is actually going to both help me and teach me to stub my first wig.
Yay!
And it's going to be my Pura wig, which I already use it for Pura, but I have to do the ponytail funny because the hair is loose. It's not a ponytail wig. So we're going to make it into a ponytail wig. And I went and I bought wefts so that we can do that. And so I can give it actual sideburns, because you'll notice that not a lot of wigs have sideburns styled into the wig. They're basically just all loose around the face, and you actually have to cut them in. So I ended up getting a little bit of extra clip-on wefts for that. So I can clip it to my actual hair and have sideburns without having to constantly paint my sideburns because I refuse to shave them.
You're the only person I know who does that. It's so funny.
Does what?
Who actually paints their sideburns. Either they shave
my
them
my hair shows through the wig.
I know, but most people I know don't do it.
Yes,
it's
I know.
Funny.
I'm that dedicated to my art, man. No, I can't shave my sideburns. Once in my life have I done that. And I do not look good without them. I need to have them because I look really funny without them. There is pictorial evidence of this somewhere in my family's archives. I don't have them because I purposely don't take pictures of myself.
I have to say, I
take them for that reason.
Yeah, which I appreciate the fact that you
my
are
hair
dedicated.
My hair is so dark, it will show under anything except for a black wig. Seriously, my hair shows under everything.
I understand. I totally get it. It's okay.
I need to start getting the, what is it Arda has? The new plastic. It's basically like a lip balm tube of plastic that they use to cover. It's basically kind of a wax almost. It's a new product. Go look at Arda's website, because now they have makeup products and theatrical products. But they have something that is specifically meant to conceal dark hair. so that you can color over it. And it's meant mostly for people like me that have dark hair.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I've used it before. I have mixed results with it because my hair around my eyebrows is kind of fine and thin, so I prefer to use the glue stick method. But essentially, that's right. What it is. It's glue stick over your eyebrows, eyelashes, whatever you want. Not eyelashes, but whatever you want it to be, so that way you can repaint them with makeup.
It's a little bit more professional, and it stays longer than glue stick does. But I worry slightly because it is a wax. It's like, I don't want it to pull my hair. Glue stick does pull some hair, unfortunately, because that's the nature of glue. But I like to have some hair on my eyebrows. I still use the glue stick method because it's the least toxic and the cheapest.
You know, the fact that it's water-based.
Then foundation, then paint.
Yeah. The fact that it's water-based, I feel a little bit more comfortable using that. I have yet to have it pull any hair out, so.
That's good.
Yeah, I have to say that I am very, very fortunate that my family is full of high forehead people, and I don't like to say I have a forehead. I have a 6 head, because when you actually put all my fingers up here, I've got like a 6 head going on. So I've got like the ideal head shape for wigs, because they sit like right here.
No need for lace front.
No lead for, well, I still use lace fronts, which is funny. I still use the lace fronts, but I have like no sideburns or anything. So I'm like, yes, wigs are the best thing ever. It makes my hair look normal. It makes my forehead look normal. So when you guys say about you have all these problems, I just kind of look at you like, really? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm the weird one. I don't have that problem.
Yeah. So some of us have things like widow's peaks and whatnot that we got to cover. Yeah.
My head goes all the way up here and it's like, oh, there's the hair.
Well, as they would say in ancient times, it just means that there's more space for the sun to reach your brain and make you wiser.
That's it why just gives me sunburn.
Well, you got to sacrifice a little for wisdom, man.
Sun is evil. Fudge that.
Then you really are a vampire.
Darn right. I just don't sparkle.
Anyways, moving on to our lovely interview. We actually spent time at ANT just before Thanksgiving, which due to our recording schedule, this just happened to be the episode where we're doing the actual review now. And we had the chance to interview one of the guests, Quantum Destiny, and she was gracious enough to give us about 10 minutes of her time so that we could ask her random questions about cosplay, of course. So hopefully you guys will enjoy this. This is Quantum Destiny.
Yay!
Hey Podders, I am here with the infamous Quantum Destiny.
Hi.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. So first time at ANT, what do you think of it so far?
I think it's great. I love, small anime cons. It's my favorite thing to do. It really is, everybody's really friendly, and so far the food has been really good, so that's great.
Have you tried out any Texas food yet?
I will today. Yesterday it was kind of like we did a family style kind of food at one of the cafes, but it's been really good, so I'm going to try more today.
That's basically what you do in Texas. You come here to shop and eat.
Pretty much what I want to do anyways, so all the time, so that's pretty good.
So let's actually talk about cosplay and not food, though cosplayers are always hungry and we love to eat, just by law. I have to say, I'm going to fangirl just a little bit here for a second. When I first started getting into cosplay, you were kind of my inspiration.
Oh.
I went to a convention, and I was like, what are all these people doing dressing up? And they said, we're doing cosplay. I went home, I Googled it. The very first image that came up was you in your Amelia outfit, your very first one.
Oh my gosh.
And the second image was you in Dragon Ball costumes, and I was like, I want to do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So I guess one of the first costumes I've made, well, back in 2002, I started cosplaying from Dragon Ball and like all those old series. And I guess you saw in 2006 when I did Slayers, and I guess a lot of my pictures are Googleable.
Yes.
And, I've had little kids come up to me and say, you're the Gohan from Google. And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, I guess so. So that's really, you know, just how cosplay has inspired people. And I'm really surprised that I might have inspired you. That's great. And I feel so old now, but whatever.
You're still younger than I am, so it's okay.
I don't know. How old are you?
31.
Okay, yeah, I'm just a little bit. I'm 29, so yeah.
So what got you inspired to get into cosplay?
Well, the same as you. I went to my first convention, which was Fan Expo, which not really anime, but it's in Toronto, and I saw Star Trek cosplayers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I recognized that. I thought, wow, that's really cool. I want to do that, but I'm not, I don't want to cosplay Star Trek. I want to cosplay from Dragon Ball, because that was popular at the time.
Because Dragon Ball's cooler.
Well, I don't know about that now. I like both equally now, but I definitely wanted to try cosplaying, and Dragon Ball was the reason why I started. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Now, a big thing with you is you have really awesome wigs, but then you also do these really cool muscle suits. What got you interested in going down that route?
It's going to be Dragon Ball again. just because, you know, being a really short girl, and you want to portray characters that look totally different from you, you kind of have to try and do something new and try and go outside the box and do what I wanted to try and do is get, you know, the actual arms, because they all have ripped muscles, and I don't have any of that. So I just, you know, to be authentic, I started trying to do muscle suits and wigs. Obviously, Dragon Ball, that hair doesn't exist in reality, and it doesn't even look good when you do it. So I was just like, well, what can I do? What kind of techniques can never be done before, I guess, with wigs? And I didn't want to put paper mache on my head because people were doing that at the time. I wanted to still use wig fiber. And so I started coming up with like 3D structures and that sort of thing. And shared the tutorials online, and it kind of took off. So that's great.
Now, you do a lot of classic anime, which I know Amber and I both really appreciate because we don't get to see that very often. do you have like newer costumes from newer animes, or do you have like a particular series that you really love other than Dragon Ball?
Yeah, recently it's been Kill la Kill, and I think it's infamous rather maybe than famous of why it's popular right now. But I really liked it just because it was all about sewing. There was like a theme of sewing and garment construction, and clothing is the enemy. And anybody who cosplays and likes to dress up probably can relate to that, even though they're not wearing very much clothes in that series. But you know, it's really popular, it's really new, and that's probably my most popular one right now, just because it's new and so that's Kill la Kill.
Definitely Kill la Kill. All right, so another thing that I do is I love your Tumblr. I think it is uber awesome, and you're probably one of the only cosplayers that I've seen who's like active on it. So my first question is, what got you interested in Tumblr? And then the second one is going to be, how are you able to spend so much time on it? And because you craft these really unique messages for people.
Oh my God.
How do you find the time for that?
I waste my time, obviously. So I started using Tumblr when it came out. And, you know, that was back when, you know, internet cost a little bit more. So that was, I think I was on dial-up. No, that wasn't on dial-up. But it was 2010 when Tumblr started. And I started using it, and you know, I started having to pay more because, you know, there's gifts and everything, and it's loading everything. So I didn't use it for a while after that. I kind of let it stay dormant, but then I started figuring out how to make my own gifts. And I say GIF, I don't say GIF, just so you know, that's how you say it. And I figured out how to make them, and you know, I had so much video from cons and cosplays from beforehand, and people don't really comment the same way and appreciate the same way on YouTube. Mm-hmm. At least they didn't at the time. So I started making gifts, and it kind of got popular, I guess, from that. Mm. And yeah, people ask really weird things, and I guess I have a pretty good sense of humor about stuff, so I'd like to answer that way. And I basically use it for fun, as a pastime, so that's why my Tumblr is always being updated.
Again, I'm just amazed that you're able to find time to do that. It's a waste of time.
Yeah. I'm kind of ashamed at how much time I actually spend on it. But so I can't be on it all the time because like I do have other responsibilities that I do take care of. So I'm not on there 24/7. But yeah, I love the community. And even though it can get weird sometimes, with non-questions, obviously, it's great. So I love seeing and reblogging, and things go viral, and that's great. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so now we get to go to our fun questions. What is your favorite material to work with? And this can be like a fabric, it can be wigs, it can be whatever, like whatever you want it to be.
My favorite material ever is Easy Felt. It's called Stiff Felt. You can get it from craft stores like dickblick.com and that sort of thing. So it's a stiff felt, and you can cut it, you can sew it, you can glue it, and it won't, you know, rip and bend. And I just use it for everything, actually. I have like 3 boxes full, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so now that we have your favorite, what's your least favorite?
latex. And this is Kill la Kill related, obviously. I spent like 6 months gluing Senkets together, and I just hate it. It's not user-friendly. It's not, you know, as somebody who doesn't have a lot of patience for things,
right.
It's you need patience, and you need to be able to sit and glue stuff that curls. Oh, it's terrible. I hate it. But it looks good.
It looks good when it's all done. It's just the time you have to put into it.
It's, yeah. That's my least favorite.
I'm a latex junkie, so I understand.
Really? Oh, yeah. So I hate the sound it makes. I hate pulling it on. It's just it looks great, but then it's just, the amount of effort you have to put in is I don't know if I would do that again. So.
Now, if you had any type of budget, you had any timeline, what one costume would you like to make?
It's on my list, but I haven't gotten around to getting all the materials. But as you said, Slayers, I love it. Amelia, Princess Amelia. So she has a really nice big gown in Slayers Try, which is the third season. And it's really pink and really ruffly. And I want to learn how to make a corset to do that. And like, she has nice jewelry. So I have jewelry that I'm trying to make. And yeah, so it's something that I've never really tried to do before, especially a big ball type gown.
Yeah,
that's not really been in my repertoire of what I like to do, so it's something that's been on my list, and I'm still trying to buy everything. Yeah.
So you have a pretty extensive history of costumes. Is there any one that you look back and that you want to remake? I know you've remade your Amelia. I like both versions, because even still I'm like, I want to be that. But is there any one costume that you would like to remake?
You know, I'd like to remake my well, not so much that I want to remake it, but I think I could just do a better job now, is Jessie from Pokemon.
Okay.
That's the outfit. Not many people know that I've done it, but because I made the wig in like 5 days and I had like really horrible crash and burn, I was kind of not the best shape to be wearing that as well. So I don't have very many pictures, but I think now if I tried to do it again, I would, you know, do a good job, but I don't think I will remake it. It's too much work.
The wig itself is kind of a nightmare on its own.
Yeah.
All right, and then our final question. If you have any one piece of advice for brand new cosplayers, what would it be?
You know, don't listen to bad comments. I know it's really easy to get discouraged, especially when somebody will, like, walk by you and say, you don't look anything like that. And, you know, it just hurts you. But if you really want to cosplay a certain character, if you love the series and you want to bring it to life, do it. Don't let that stop you. You know, there's so often that you can typecast yourself, or your friends can even tell you, you shouldn't be that because you don't look, you know, exactly like that. But don't let that stop you. Just try and give your passion a reality. That's what I like to do.
That is fantastic advice. Okay, so now pimp out your page. Where can people find you?
So I use Facebook, and my Facebook handle is Quantum Destiny. So it's just facebook.com/pages/Quantum Destiny. And my Tumblr, I have two screen names. I try to use one to just, you know, have my fan fiction and all that. But, you know, it kind of mixes. So my other screen name is Techno Ranma. So Techno, like the music. And Ranma, like the series.
Like the anime.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, thank you again, Quantum Destiny. Yay!
And we're back. Thank you again to Quantum Destiny for giving us some of her time.
Yay!
I fangirled out at Herlina Inverse.
I know, isn't it so pretty? And that's not her first one, too. I'm like, it's so pretty.
It was the old school version for those who haven't seen the pictures yet. It's from the very first series of Slayers. It's not from the more recent, you know, Slayers Next, Slayers Try. So it definitely brought back memories. All the way back in 1995.
Ah, aged.
That's when Slayers came out, man.
I feel old.
We are old.
True. We're old by anime standards. We're not old by comic book standards.
There you go. Because I'm also not old by symphony standards either.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm definitely not old by garden industry standards. Good gravy. I'm young.
All right. So speaking of Anime North Texas, or ANT, as we call it for short, we ended up having quite a bit to say about ANT, both good and bad. So, you know, gear up, grab yourself a cuppa of your favorite beverage, because this is going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah, get the popcorn ready.
And I want to preface this by saying that everything that we're going to say in this, and I think I can speak for you safely on this, we mean it in the most constructively critical way possible. We say this not to bash the con. We say this not to try and stroke egos. We're not saying this just to be, you know, foolish people about it. We're saying this because there are things that need to be fixed. And there are things that went well, but that can also use improvement. So we're saying this as people who enjoy conventions, who want it to be an even better experience for everybody involved. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. So that said, let us start with the location since they moved this year. They used to be in a different hotel in Fort Worth, and they actually moved to downtown Fort Worth, downtown proper. And it was at the Hilton Fort Worth, which is right off of 35 West and I-30. So you can always find it on a map if you want to look for it. I had problems with this location. Particular problems that the old location did not have. And there were two big ones. One was that for those who have never been to downtown Fort Worth, it's a lot like downtown Dallas. All of the streets are one way. And many of them are not necessarily straight. They'll kind of diverge in different directions on the same street. And there are not necessarily signs telling you where to go. So that said, it made it very difficult to get around Fort Worth. And if you ended up getting lost, it was very easy to stay lost. Especially if you have not been to downtown Fort Worth before, as I had not been in many, many years. At least certainly as the one driving. And it was not very well labeled on the Hilton where the entrance was. Because if you approached it from any direction other than the south, you didn't see the entrance. Because the entrance was on the south side of the Hilton. So I actually had to ask directions from another parking garage. I was like, where is the Hilton? And he pointed and I said, yeah, I see the Hilton. Where do I go in? And he says, oh, you have to go down the street and turn right. And of course, the entrance was right there. But I never would have found it that way. Google does not tell you that either, by the way.
Yeah, that one's a tricky thing with any GPS. And it's not just Google. It does this with every GPS. It's just the way that it's set up. If you don't know that the drive is right there, it's not going to take you to that location. It's always going to put you on the west side. I had to think about that for a second.
And actually, now that I think about it, I just thought of another issue with that location. So I have three total. The second one was restaurants. Downtown Fort Worth is mostly business-based. Office hours Monday through Friday, you know, 8 to 5, 9 to 5-ish. Most of the restaurants that are around there are not open on the weekends. That tends to be a problem when you have a mass horde of convention goers who don't always necessarily want sit-down restaurants, because there were quite a few sit-down restaurants, most of them not within a convention budget or had massive waits of up to 2 hours for you to just sit down. That didn't include getting the food. So there was a distinct lack of food options in the near vicinity that didn't basically require you to get in your car and drive somewhere out more than a few blocks, basically. I felt really bad for the local subway that was open, and I will get to that later when we actually go through the timeline of the con itself. But restaurants and food were just overall an issue that I think needs to be addressed. It would have been very helpful for the con, you know, constructively, to have some sort of maybe flyer in the hotel rooms or something on their website that said, hey, here are some examples of places you can eat that are local, that are open, that will fit a convention budget. The last problem that I had with the convention location specifically was the parking. At the Hilton Fort Worth, there is no self-park. It is valet only. And valet is $25 a day. That is more than the self-park at the Anatole and nearly as much as valet at the Anatole, which is Project Akon's hotel. That basically meant that if you didn't want to pay $25 a day, you had to go find parking in the city. And that can be a little bit iffy, simply because prices can change on a dime, as they always do whenever there's conventions in town. A lot of them were not close. You had to walk at least 2 blocks to get to the Hilton, and now those were the closest lots. And even then, that area is not necessarily well lit. I probably personally would not have felt safe walking by myself at night trying to get to my car or from my car if I were parked in any one of those external lots. So to that end, I actually had to spring for valet just because I didn't feel safe parking my car anywhere else. So I think that my suggestion to A&T staff, should any of them be watching, would be to have a parking map. Even if it's just to say, here are the lots, here is a guideline to the prices. That would have been nice, because nowhere on A&T's website did they mention parking at all. So I'm sure there were quite a few people that actually got sticker shock when they got to the Hilton and realized that all they have is valet. And the valet is not cheap, especially if you're staying there for 2 or 3 days. So A&T, I highly suggest you put that on your website under the hotel information. And then my suggestion is to have a parking map of some sort, even if it only goes out like 4 blocks. That should be plenty sufficient. It's really hard to know where to park in Fort Worth otherwise.
Yeah, I have to say, on top of that, as somebody who works near Fort Worth, I'm literally like 5 minutes away from the convention center. I use that loosely with lots of air quotes. I know my way around downtown Fort Worth well enough that I knew where to go. It was easy for me, but I could see where people could get really lost, especially since there weren't really any maps on the website. You just kind of had to shug it into your GPS and hope for the best. And I'm sure a lot of looping occurred because of it.
There's also a lot of construction.
Yeah.
That GPS does not tell you about. And actually, one of the main exits that you would normally take to get to the Hilton was closed entirely.
That's always fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I found out the hard way trying to loop myself back around and had to go all the way back down the interstate and loop myself back around again.
So fun. Not.
Construction. And I had my phone GPS was on and I was trying to get to it. And it's just like, this doesn't tell me all these streets are closed.
Nope.
It also didn't tell us until the weekend of, speaking of closures, that the Fort Worth Parade of Lights was the same weekend. They shut down the drive in front of the Hilton. They basically said, okay, at 4 p.m., you have to have left. Because otherwise, you won't get out until 9 p.m., since they shut down the drive and you can't go anywhere. That was fine and good, until we got a little note on Sunday morning, that said, oh, by the way, they're going to close other streets at 3 p.m., so you really need to be out of here by 3 p.m. unless you want to get out by 9 or 10. And it was just like...
That's a great reaction.
That was pretty much my reaction when I got the paper, because even though I had planned to leave by 3 anyway, it's like, this screws over the guests of the convention. This screws over any panelist who was scheduled after 2 p.m. And this screws over anybody who is planning on hanging around with friends or having a late lunch that day, or basically anybody that didn't already plan to be completely out of Fort Worth by 3 p.m. There's no time to plan. There's no time to make adjustments. If you had to catch a flight late, you ended up having to sit in the airport for 2 or 3 hours, which is insane. So yeah, closures and such were not helpful in that area.
Definitely not. And it's one of those things where I, like Amber, I kind of end up having to roll around and it was like, you know what, I'm here. I don't see any empty parking that's close by. Let me just go ahead and do valet. Dude, that valet price is just way too high. There are bigger cities like New York and Boston that are not that high on valet. That is just an astronomical, astounding price. It's an asinine price. That's really what I should say. It's an asinine price. Nobody should be paying for that. So yeah, I think it would be to A&T's benefit next year, especially since parking is going to be a future issue. So
they're going to get a discount.
They need to negotiate a discount. They have to. If they expect the attendees to utilize the money in the hotel the way that they're meant to, they're going to have to negotiate a discount. That's too much for anybody.
I mean, even if it's like the way San Japan does it, if only the person whose name is on the hotel room gets a discount, or if X number of cars per room get a discount, or whatever, they really need to get some sort of concession from the hotel. Because that was just, it was a lot. It was as much for parking as it was to pay to get into the convention at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stayed for 3 days, that was almost as much as a room at the hotel for a night. That's a lot of money.
It's insane. I've never spent that much before on valet, ever. Ever!
Remember that the more you spend on parking, it cuts into an attendee's food budget, it cuts into their dealer's room budget, it cuts into their registration budget. It basically eats up any spare income that they would have had to spend at the convention or in the convention area. So, yes, recommend negotiating some sort of parking discount, you know, $5. $5 would have been great. I mean, yes, I would have liked it to be down to 15, but it's certainly a start.
And since some people already know, I have my qualms with the valet parking people. Not the nicest, and they, yeah, yeah. I understand that they were busy. I tried to be very respectful, very patient, very polite. But when I ask you several times if you could move a car in front of me so I could leave on time, so not get caught in the parade, and you tell me to jump my car over the curb, I'm not jumping my Prius over a curb. You see how low this thing is to the ground? No. I almost called for a manager. It was bad. They were not the nicest people, which was sad. It the fact that they weren't nice in valet and they kept acting like everybody was a jerk diminished the fact that the people inside the hotel were nice. That's always not so fun.
All right. So I want to move on to general things that were basically pre-con, which is specifically guidebook and their website. Okay. So guidebook was never actually completely updated. Their guidebook app still had cosplay prejudging at 2 a.m. Saturday morning.
Good gravy. They never fixed it.
No. And I checked it at the convention itself because as a Hilton member, I get free Wi-Fi. So I hopped on an updated guidebook just to check because as somebody who attends convention a lot, guidebook can actually be really helpful. It can help me keep my own schedule and it can also help because it gives you short panel descriptions. So if I want to see what something is going on in the room next to me, I can find out by just popping open the app real quick. It's very convenient. I love guidebook. Their guidebook leaves much to be desired. It really does. And I actually went through their guidebook. And granted, like I'm biased. I'm comparing it to Project Akon's. But that's Project Akon has so much more stuff in theirs. I feel like ANT could have at least made sure that all of the panels were showing at the correct times with the correct descriptions and the correct hosts. That would have been a start. A decent parking map in the guidebook app would have been great. A good listing of local food places that not only deliver but are within walking distance that were open would have also been great. I did not see that in their guidebook. And their guest dossiers left a bit to be desired. I didn't know very much about the guest to begin with. I didn't even know who Quantum Destiny was.
I did.
I know you did. You know everybody. I know nobody.
Well, what's interesting is as you were talking, I decided to pull up their website and see if they made any changes to the quote unquote fixes that people asked them to. Like, hey, you mislabeled this. Could you fix this? And they said, yeah, sure. It's still not labeled properly on the website.
The website was actually the next thing I was going to get to.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it felt like they kind of slap and dashed it all together. If you're not going to put the time into making the guidebook complete, even if it's just like the schedule and the list of people who are attending, you know, you don't have to have anything big and fancy, but if you can't make it polished and finished, there's no point in even having it. Just dump it. We can't even get the
elsewhere.
Yeah, we can't even get the normal schedule fixed properly with the right descriptions. We shouldn't be focusing on a guidebook.
Speaking of their website, Their convention website is very rarely updated. And even when it is, it's usually by the head of cosplay.
Thanks, Kat.
Or by the head of programming, whoever booked the guests. They updated the website. Other than that, I think it was either the week before or 2 weeks before the con. I actually had to message them on their Facebook and go, guys, you have no maps on your website at all, including of the convention itself. You have no information on panels. You have no schedule. You have no gaming information for your gaming area. It's 2 weeks before the con. Please update your website. And it was only after that post was made that I saw updates being made. And we shouldn't have to push for that. That should be something that your head of programming, or at the very least, your website manager should be able to manage for you, and should definitely be updated a week before the con, if not two. The website runs on WordPress, which is fine and good. WordPress is highly vulnerable. So if they can manage it, I would highly recommend reaching out to one of the web gurus who lives in the Metroplex. I know there are people who do websites for a living. Hint, hint for some of our friends who do web design, who may be able to work with them to improve their website. Make it easier for them to manage content-wise and make it a little bit less vulnerable. The schedule was still in rough draft 1 week before the con and subject to change at any time.
Why? Just why?
We had to ask for the schedule as attendees 1 week before the con. It did not come out publicly until it was specifically asked for. And even then, we were told it was a rough draft, that it was not complete. Guys, please, constructive criticism here. Please have your schedules finalized a week before the con. We all understand if something goes wrong. It happens at cons. Guests have to cancel at the last minute because of work obligations. That's fine. Everything else on the schedule should be finalized by that point. It should not be events subject to change at any time. That disclaimer is implied. It just makes it look like you're having to rush and throw things together at the last minute, and that the con is just running out of control in terms of programming. It looks bad from a PR perspective, not to mention attendees can't plan for squat. And especially as press, because we need to know what we're going to cover in advance, preferably. We really needed that schedule, preferably sooner than we had gotten it, but we made do with what we had. And that schedule needs to be complete. It needs to have accurate panel descriptions and times. It needs to have accurate hosts listed. And it needs to have accurate guests listed to the best of your ability. And if it takes a separate person running programming to do that, that's fine. We're not picky. But a week before the con, everything should be done. You should be in cruise control by that point, theoretically. So, I mean, we're saying this because as attendees, we need these things to have a good con, to plan to have a good con. I know that there are people who actually plan their arrival and departure times based on panels. And there are also people who plan their meal schedules around panels, too.
Or people who only attend the convention based on what the panels are, because that's what they're into. And if they don't have that information beforehand, and they show up to a con, and that's when they get the panel schedule, it's like, well, what did I just waste my money on?
Indeed. All right. So if we can, unless you have anything else to add, let's move into the con itself.
No, other than to reiterate that they should probably just drop guidebook entirely. Just focus on getting the schedule complete and as accurate as possible, at least 2 weeks before a con. I mean, that should just be standard. And it doesn't matter if you're a 500-man con or a 50,000-man con. We still expect a schedule to be available.
And accurate.
And accurate, a week and a half, 2 weeks before a convention. There's no reason for us to have to prompt you on social media for the schedule. It just seems ludicrous to me.
All right. So, day one, which is Friday. All right. So, Val and the rest of our room actually arrived before I did because I had to work that day. So I ended up actually arriving later that night on Friday. I missed pretty much all of Friday programming. However, there were some things that I wanted to bring up. Again, constructive criticism, these are things we would like them to address. As soon as I walked in, 2 out of 3 total elevators in the entire hotel are already broken.
Woo! Yeah, that was fun. They were broken even when I arrived, and I arrived about 3-4 hours before Amber did.
That Hilton only has 3 elevators in the entire Hilton. That's it. 2 of them were already broken. Not shut off because, you know, the hotel didn't want them used. They broke.
They broke. They were legitimately broken.
And, you know, basically, the first day of the con, you have all your stuff to bring with you. You can't always go upstairs. And to the best of my knowledge, the escalators were already off.
Yep.
At that point, they were effectively stairs as well.
Yep.
They only went up to the second floor. And we were staying on the 4th floor, which I did purposefully because I knew that we would probably eventually have to take the stairs. Hint, hint to those who wish to stay at hotels in the future for cons. Get the lowest possible floor in case you too have to take the stairs. So basically it took me forever to get back up to the room. Because with that one elevator, of course, the disabled get priority, which I'm cool with. I let every single one of them go in front of me. At the same time, it took forever to get up to my room because there was one elevator and I could not go up the stairs with what I had. So yeah, the elevator line was already long on day one. So basically, my first impression of the Hilton was, this Hilton is not built to house a convention itself. It was built to house the people who go to the convention at the convention center across the street. Because it really was literally across from the Fort Worth Convention Center. So I don't think the Hilton was meant for this.
Probably not, no. It's good for business meetings and that's about it.
Pretty much. Not a con of a couple thousand people.
Nope.
All right, so once we arrived, Val basically went to get press stuff taken care of. Oh, the press stuff.
It's been a mess for the past 3 years, let's be honest, unfortunately.
They have a press head.
Yes.
They have a person who is designated as their head of press. And so when Val arrived to get our things, which we had already, you know, contacted them, gotten press passes, we had already gotten things arranged. Apparently there were not exactly press folders available. Those were kind of thrown together at the last minute. And I will talk about what's in the folder in a moment. There were also not press badges.
No.
And this is not to say that the badges weren't ready. This is to say that press did not actually get different badges. Press were regular attendees.
Yep.
No special privileges were given as press. Basically, you were handed an attendee badge and basically said, you're an attendee, you have to wait in line like every other attendee. You can't sit in the front, special, you can't go in early. This does not give you any special access beyond what a standard attendee gets. You have to ask guests if you can record. You have to ask to take photos. Basically, there was no point to this badge being used for press. There wasn't. There wasn't any reason for us to even apply as press. They did not have any sort of arrangement system for getting interviews with guests. We had to arrange that on our own. I'm not even sure if they had contact with the guests' agents to where we could even do this if we did not already have that contact info. They did not facilitate any sort of special locations for filming. In other words, say we could just set up out of the way over here. They did not have any designated places for that. Yeah. So basically there was nothing except for the press folder itself. And if you see me constantly looking down, it's because I'm looking at my laptop where I took notes on this. The 2 pieces of paper that were in the press folder.
I have photos of said paper.
They had a bunch of typos in them. Somebody did not run spell check on them, and it looked like somebody had hurriedly typed this up 2 hours earlier. Again, we're not saying this to bash you. Constructive criticism. This should be prepped in advance of the con. Not what looks like the morning of. It had very tiny bios of the guests, if at all. and the press folio did not have very much information on the con itself. So if you had not already been to A&T, you didn't necessarily know what they were about or what made them different than any other con. So basically, it was just a really fast run through of everything and everyone about the con. No pictures. It was a basic, solid text document that was written essay style with small headers. And that was it. That was the only thing in the folder. No facts, no statistics, no other bios about the guests, no links to their work.
Yeah, there wasn't even a schedule in there for us.
There was next to nothing. And the folder was just a plain folio, too. It wasn't, there was nothing special designating it as for press. That was it. It's like, then basically we're just glorified attendees. We're not even press, because even attendees bring cameras in there.
My whole thing, too, was the system in trying to pick up the badge, because this is the same thing that happened to me last year. They told me they would be available at the volunteers table. Okay, cool. Go to the volunteers table. Volunteers table says, oh, we don't have press badges here. I think you need to go up to ConOps and talk to somebody to take care of that. And I kind of go, okay, could somebody direct me to ConOps, please? Because we just got to get this figured out, or get somebody on a radio. Because immediately I was thinking in my head, this is a repeat of last year. It's going to take me an hour and a half to get a press badge. This is pointless. Go up to ConOps, waited up there for almost half an hour as we were trying to radio whoever was in charge of press to come in there. I had to sign some paperwork that basically says, you know, yes, I'll use the photos for blah, 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 whatever. And then he was like, okay, now we got to take you back down to the volunteers table and give you your badge. And I was like, I was just at the volunteers table about half an hour ago. They told me to come up here to get my badge. And he's like, yeah, well, we're doing this system this year, so we're going to go back down there and put your name on a badge. And I was just like, oh my goodness. And then to make it worse, is that they basically had to register me as a new attendee, as just a general attendee, basically. So I had to give them all of our information all over again that I had just written down on that piece of paper that they couldn't bring with them.
The badges were not printed. They were handwritten. They were blank.
They were handwritten. They were handwritten. There wasn't anything special or fancy about them. So it was just like I went through an hour of going back and forth, wasting my time that could have been spent on interviewing people, on taking photos, on promoting the convention. And instead, I had to go through this mess of hassle that was pointless. If you're going to do press, it needs to be efficient. It needs to be streamlined. If you tell us that the badges are going to be ready for us at the volunteers table, they need to be ready at the volunteers table. You shouldn't be having us do this dance back and forth. If you expect us to do our job, then you need to help us. Help us help you.
Speaking of photos, their photo policy, which was lovingly described in the press folio. I mean, there was more detail paid attention to their policies about photography and videography than there were about the guests, than there were about the con itself. It was all about the photography policies. And they said, first and foremost, you have to ask every attendee before taking photos. This is not every cosplayer, which is fine. We understand, you know, cosplay is not consent. We're cool with asking cosplayers. They're basically implying with this policy that you cannot take hall shots. You cannot take candid shots. You have to ask every single person before you take their photo. For most cons, for those who have never been pressed, at most cons, it is implied that once you enter public space at that con, you have consented to having your photo and likeness used. That's common practice at almost every con I have ever been to. In fact, all con explicitly has signs saying such.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in con public space, you have consented to having your photo taken. All con says this. A&T basically says, nope, you have to ask every single person before you take that photo. That makes it near impossible for hall shots. And they also explicitly said that you cannot take what they called upshots or downshots. You cannot take shots going up the escalator. I assume it's because they did not want any upskirt shots, since the panels that basically barricaded off the second floor were glass and they were transparent. But you also could not take shots pointing down.
That made no sense to me. I did. Budget.
Okay. And they also asked that press makes multiple photo dumps per day to their press lead. Basically, they're saying they want all of your photos and they will use them however they want. Why would we spend all of our time getting massive dumps of photos, which can literally be gigabytes, and then have to track down their press head to give them to him in a format that he can readily accept them at the time? Because unless he's carrying around a laptop, it's not like you can hand him a flash drive and go, here's all of my photos for the last 3 hours, and expect that he'll be able to clean the drive off and have it back to you for use. And I'm not handing somebody a thumb drive and letting them keep it. So yeah. Basically, they wanted you to, this is what it sounded like. I'm not saying it is this way, but it basically came across as, we want you to do all the work of photographing and documenting our convention, and then we'll take those and we'll use them in our marketing and our advertising purposes without any sort of compensation. That's insane.
Yeah.
And I say that because we're focusing on covering the convention, not tracking down the press head to give him multiple photo dumps of all of our photos in a day. That also implies that we did not go through and weed any of the photos out, because as a photographer, you have a digital camera. You have almost unlimited storage space. You're sitting there taking shots, many of which may be blurry, many of which may be needing editing, for example, having red eyes in the photo, some of which need sharpening, some of which may need compiling if it's panoramic. I mean, you're not going to hand somebody a raw feed of photos unless it's for another photographer. Otherwise, you are literally giving them probably double the amount of photos that they would need. It would have been so much easier if their press policy basically said, we would appreciate it if before the end of the convention, you gave us a selection of your photos that we may use in future marketing, advertising, whatever purposes for the convention. That's fine. We've done that for other cons. But we usually like the courtesy of being able to go through our photos first, clean them up, get rid of duplicates, get rid of blurry stuff, make them nice, and then we're happy to share them.
This is why I started watermarking the crap out of everything that we do.
Not to mention, again, we were not given press badges, so it's not like we could get up close and personal to take great photos. And even then, we were supposed to ask every single person before we did them.
Guess what Val did not do? She actually did her normal press job and pretended that the press thing did not exist. I know that sounds terrible. It sounds horrible. But if you honestly expect us to actually report a convention properly, let me do my job and report a convention properly. All the rules and all the restrictions were inhibiting me from doing so. And it's not like I did anything illegal. I didn't do the upskirts. I don't do that. I'm a mature adult. I do not do those things. I still ask the people before I took their photos. But if there's somebody walking in the background of the image, I can't stop them. It just is what it is. Let it just chill the fudge out.
The last thing I would like to note in the presser that we were given, the press dossier, is that the press contact email we were given is the same general address for the rest of the con that never gets answered in a timely fashion.
Yeah, I think what? That's, I think we've emailed
not
them.
A great way of doing
we
it.
Probably emailed them 3 or 4 times over the past couple of months. They have yet to respond to a single one of them. It wasn't until I contacted a friend who happened to be working for a convention did I get an answer. And it's like, really? Their communication skills are in dire need of improvement, not just through their email, but their social media too. It seems like the only time they contact or connect with people is through their Facebook group page, which is fine.
And even then, that is extremely rare to get a response from them.
Exactly. It needs, if somebody asks a question on their Facebook page, on their actual business profile, they need to respond to it. There are so many unanswered questions on there that it irks me to no end.
And it's possible that they may have lost business due to unanswered emails, because if you have vendors wanting to sell and you don't answer that vendor back, you've lost their business.
Absolutely.
So that is basically all I had for day one. I basically went back to the room at that point. I was super irritated with just the whole way that the con had started, the way it was being run. Yeah. Yeah, it was not a good first day of the con.
Mine was similar, mostly since I had an earlier start. I was able to sit in on Quantum Destiny's Boobs and Muscle panel, which was fantastic, and it made me very giddy and fangirl all over her because I've been watching her since I started cosplaying. So for me, I was like, yay, happy moments. And then we went out to a birthday dinner for a friend. So there was my first day.
All right. So day two, Saturday, the second day.
We're only on Saturday? Jeez.
Yeah, that was Friday.
Wow.
That was presser day. All right. So on Saturday, elevators are working again. Yay!
Yay!
Maintenance come in. They serviced the elevators overnight because they were all fixed. Escalators still off, however. I don't think they were ever turned on during the entire convention.
No.
So basically, Saturday was panels day. We spent most of our time trying to attend panels, interview people, do what we normally do at cons to try and bring you guys as much content as we can get our hands on. Unfortunately, the way that panel scheduling was done, no time for setup teardown scheduled between panels. They are back to back. That happened with quite a few panels, to where basically one ended on the hour, the next one was scheduled to start on the hour.
The hour.
And that basically meant that the following panelists did not have setup time. They basically had to take the first part of their panel as setup time. So nobody actually had the full panel time unless there was nobody before you and nobody after you. They need to give them 15 minutes between panels so that the person prior can end gracefully at the ending time instead of having to try and end early. And that gives the next person setup time so that they can have their full time as well. Panelists were not given 5-minute warning before panel end. They were simply told to end when the time came. That can be a bit of a shocker when you're suddenly told, oh, panel time's up, wrap it up. They didn't have warning. They didn't have someone come in and just do this. Give them 5 minutes so that they can wrap up, please. Because I actually did see one panelist actually get caught off guard because they were not given warning. In the second panel, I gave them warning at 5 minutes. The staff didn't. And I don't know if that's just because they didn't know or they weren't keeping track of time or whatever. But give your panelists some sort of heads up, please. Especially if you're not giving them teardown and setup time. Otherwise, everybody is caught off guard. Panel rooms were very small. I think that's just the Hilton.
Yeah.
But the rooms they held them in did not hold very many people. Even for some of the larger, better attended ones that were standing room only, people kept filtering out the back. And I think it was simply because they just didn't want to stand there the whole time. There just wasn't enough seating. All right, so Dealer's Den. We tried to go in the morning just to kind of visit it before we had panels. Yeah, their Dealer's Den was combined with Artist Alley. They were both in the same room, and combined it was smaller than the Dealer's Den last year.
Such a bad idea. Bad, bad idea.
Apparently the tables that the vendors were given, since we actually spoke with some of the vendors, the tables were extremely narrow. You couldn't put very much merchandise on them unless you brought your own tables. They had fewer vendors, not much variety to choose from. And I know at least one vendor had said that they ended up having to price their goods low because people just didn't have that much money to spend in the Dealer's Den. Or the Artist Alley, for that matter. Part of that is parking.
Yeah. Part of that is the expense of having a hotel in a downtown metroplex. You're going to spend more money on parking, on food, on hotel stay. It just means more money out the door, less money for them to spend on at your convention.
It is. And I understand, you know, having to charge more to make your money back from a more expensive hotel, having to rent out that room. At the same time, if your dealers don't break even, they're not coming back. And at the prices some of them were charging, I saw very little money changing hands in that room. I'm sure there were some vendors that made their money back. I'm not sure it's a large percentage of the people in that room. There were some vendors that didn't have any foot traffic at all. And I felt kind of bad for them.
I'm still just surprised that they combined Dealer's Den with Artist Alley, because Artist Alley just universally is known to be the open area where you don't really need a badge. Anybody who's local to the community is able to show off their wares and their goods for, you know, a reasonable price, and you get to support the local art community. That's awesome. When you squish them in with the dealer's room, you're not only cutting out half of your potential profit from dealers who typically spend more money on a table, you're less likely to get foot traffic to actually come through the door. And there was enough space on that second floor area that you could have made an Artist Alley work. It was totally feasible. So I don't know. It baffled me on why they did that.
The Dealer's Den was not labeled.
No, it was not.
If you didn't know it was back there, you wouldn't have known where it was. There were no signs pointing to it at all. The only way you would have known is if you had access to the convention maps that they gave you, that we had to ask them to put on the website. But it was still not labeled on site. So for those who actually walked in on site and didn't know, you probably lost out on a bunch of people who potentially could have gone in and spent money. Speaking of labeling things and checking things, yeah, nobody was checking badges.
Yeah.
They did in Dealer's Den. That is the only time I saw them check badges, was to go into Dealer's Den.
Yep.
I'd never saw them check badges to go into panel rooms.
Did not see that at least.
You basically could have ghosted the entire con and gone into panel rooms, and nobody would have said anything to you. The only place you couldn't have gone in was the Dealer's Den.
Which you probably wouldn't have spent your money in anyway. That's kind of depressing, isn't it? What's the whole point of even... They're kind of just missing out.
We're in there.
Yeah.
You know, we want to support the locals, because there are many locals who would love to sell at a Dealer's Den. But at the price they're having to pay and the prices they're having to charge for their goods, it's a struggle to just break even. And when you have that little foot traffic, which there was not really much foot traffic in there, but there wasn't room for very much. So even if they had a bunch of, the line to get in was long, but everybody pretty much just walked around real quick, glanced around, and then just left.
And left.
There was so little to see. And such small amount of space to do it in. People couldn't have brought that much merchandise. Everybody was stacking those wire organizers on their tables to try and fit everything out so that people could see it. And even then, there were some things. I can't imagine chainmail is going to sell very well at an anime convention. I know there is a crossover. I understand that there is a crossover in geekery. I get it. I too love chainmail. It's not something I would be budgeting to buy at an anime con. So may wish to consider some of the vendors in there not being anime related, especially when you pride yourself on having directly industry related everything else, like panels, like guests.
That's definitely one of those things where that would have been great for an Artist Alley table out in the open public area. Yeah. They pay a little bit less and they could sell their wares. If it doesn't sell as well, then they know not to do that next year. But it's just like... And I've heard a couple of vendors already complain about the pricing of the table was more expensive than some of the other conventions that have a much broader and larger audience, such as Anime Fest. And it's like, oh, and I know how expensive those tables are at A-Fest. I know how expensive they are.
Basically, the way they had it set up was that when you go up to the second floor, you can either go left or right.
Mm-hmm.
To the right were all the panels, and they had some upstairs as well, but that was basically the way you went to get to panels. To the left was registration and the guest tables. They had tables for some of the guests set up kind of in an L shape around registration, theoretically so that people who were standing in line waiting would engage the guests. The problem is they didn't really promote the guests.
No, they really didn't.
They really didn't. There were no signs telling me who was who, unless the guest themselves had a backdrop saying who they were. I wouldn't have known who any of them are. And they were very personable. I saw a couple of them walking out from behind the tables, shaking hands with guests, introducing themselves. Pretty much the others just sat at their tables and watched.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I feel so bad that, you know, was something not said at opening ceremonies? Did they need more signs? What did they need to do to promote the guests more? Because they're supposed to be part of the draw. And if they're not going to do it that way, then if you went to the long end of the L back behind registration, there was an entire empty area back there. That could have been Artist Alley. And that way it would have driven traffic around in a circle instead of just having people sit back there and veg. There was already a giant vegging area as soon as you went up the escalator directly in front of you that, in fact, they forbid us from taking photos in there. They actually had signs saying no photo shoots here. That was so people could veg. Plenty of space down there. Use the back part for Artist Alley.
It seemed like there was a lot of people taking the space that was free, and there was a lot of free empty space, and using that as veg area. And that could have been primo spots to stick more tables, to stick more merchandise, stick more vendors, stick more guests. I mean, it just felt like it was, the space wasn't properly utilized to its full potential.
One thing I missed in the dealer's den / artist alley, there were no food vendors.
None.
And that would have been a great space. I mean, since people are already so much on a budget, have somebody who sells Ramune, Pocky, all the little Asian style treats that come in the small boxes like you would get at Daiso. Have somebody sell those. I'm sure somebody would be willing to come in and vend food, even if it's prepackaged food. And attendees would lap it up because, let me get into this. The only other place in the hotel where you could get stuff, there were three of them. There was, what was it, Ruth's Steakhouse, way out of the range of most attendees because it was a pricey steakhouse. Starbucks, which was constantly full and busy. So they did good business. That was one of the positives.
Say, Starbucks was very, very awesome. I thank you, Starbucks, for being there. They were very kind and very nice to me every morning.
And Corner Pantry, which was basically their little snack shop. Corner Pantry prices were outrageous, even for a hotel. It was $9 for a croissant sandwich or a simple salad. It was $3 for soda, chips, or candy. They did not have any breakfast-type food in there at all. So if you needed breakfast, you were SOL. They had a bunch of ice cream. And then basically everything else was sugar in a package that was way overpriced. So you didn't really have any options in the hotel if Starbucks was closed, besides their cafe, which was pricey, and Roots, which was way out of the budget anyway. So realistically, a food vendor, I mean, even if they did something in that open area, have a little atrium food court. Just like Akon does. Doesn't have to have anything fancy. Burger and fries and chips. Done. Or pizza. Do it buffet style. Have people just, you know, get some yogurt, put a bunch of toppings on it, charge them $6. Yeah, it's overpriced, but you'll make a lot more that way than trying to gouge people with what little you have downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just going to convince people to go to the local gas station and buy it there and then just bring it into the hotel. And then the hotel makes no money. So that, yeah, they really needed an alternate food vendor. Speaking of signage as well, weapons check.
Where was it?
We saw a bunch of people walking around with weapons that were not checked at all. And apparently nobody stopped them.
Because no one knew where to go.
Was it registration? I didn't find that out until the third day of the con. No signs. I didn't see anything in the program book. Nothing that told me where weapons check was. Are they even doing weapons check? What were the requirements on props? That would have been a great thing to put on your website, by the way. Have a weapons policy that you can enforce. I mean, good Lord, man. Get signs out. Poster board is cheap. Gator board is cheap. Foam board, also cheap. Just get a couple of dowels and assemble a tripod stand. I'm sure the Hilton, as a business organization, can lend you some tripods for signs.
And I can say, as of Friday, when I initially walked up there, the first thing I saw was the cosplay table, because I knew the people working at the cosplay table, and I chatted with them. They spent most of their time having people ask them questions. Is this registration? Where's the dealer's room? They were basically the information desk. They put that table in the worst spot possible because that should have been the info desk. And there were no signs for where registration was. We just made a general assumption that there's a giant line there. I think that's registration.
And that's where people were saying registration was. So it was all done by word of mouth.
Yeah, that's just not how you properly run things, guys. Signs. Big key component.
All right. So moving on to local food and Subway. This was not one that you were part of.
Yeah, poor Subway.
Basically, in between panels, while Val was running off and doing a photo shoot with a friend, I basically ran out to get food because I was desperate and I did not wish to pay corner pantry prices. So I knew that there was a Subway a block away, literally, and it was one of the few places that actually was open. And so, of course, I walked out. It was really cold by that point because the cold front had just blown through. So I was like, okay, hot food. Great. So I went in. Lengthy line already. It took me 1 hour to get a sandwich. They had not told the staffer that there was a convention in town. Staffer, singular. There was one guy running the entire Subway establishment that entire time, and he said that nobody else was coming in for the rest of the night. They did not staff anyone else. So this poor guy was like, nobody told me this. I don't even know if I'm going to be here to finish this. He wanted to walk because we were running him ragged with just the number of people who wanted food. And Subway did not know, and they did not staff anybody extra to help him. So I felt really bad. Not to mention that without Subway knowing, by the time I got there, they only had two types of bread left. They had honey oat and flatbread. They were out of everything else. They had already run out of food. And by the end of that night, I'm pretty sure they might have had to close that Subway early because they didn't have any more food to give people. So I have a feeling that that Subway was not the only location that had this problem. I don't think anyone else knew there was a convention in the area. At least with Akon, when they were in the Sheridan, they told the Plaza of the Americas that there was going to be a giant convention of 20,000 people in town, and they had time to actually get extra staff and extra food to make sure they didn't run out. That did not happen here. That needs to happen here with as few establishments as you have in walking distance. That Subway's going to be one of them. So I highly recommend that if there's any way to get the word out, please do, for both the sake of the attendees and the sake of the poor staffers that had to serve us without knowing we were coming.
Preferably like 1 to 2 months in advance so they have time to plan, not the day before like you probably would have done with the schedule with us. Just saying.
It also helps to let the sit-down restaurants know too, because waits were so long that I'm sure they lost out on business too. Nobody told them about all the extra people that were suddenly going to be in town on top of the Parade of Lights people. I'm sure if they would have known, they could have staffed a few extra people, especially at basic places like the La Cocina up the road or Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, Cheesecake Factory is probably not too happy with us. In my defense, I did give him a call a week ahead of time, and I said, we're going to have 15 people showing up. I want to make a reservation. And they said, well, you don't need one. No, you don't understand. There's going to be a convention in town that weekend. I want a reservation. They still didn't take it. So I'm fortunate that they listened to me and reasoned, and they were like, okay, we'll get you a table ASAP, because I was like, you're going to have an unhappy customer here. I tried to make a reservation. I know you're Cheesecake Factory, but I still tried. I was doing the right thing.
All right. So basically, after all that, and we had food, I ended up getting out of cosplay early because I was just so exhausted at that point of having to run around and such. And it was getting cold as well. Very, very windy. Mm-hmm. Very windy. And so basically, we went casual for the evening because we were going to be filming the cosplay contest. All right. So cosplay contest time.
Yay.
Main events was tiny. People turned away from cosplay contest. It is not out of the ordinary to have people turned away from cosplay contest at other cons. This main events ballroom was tiny. It was very small. Maybe a couple hundred people?
Probably maybe? A couple hundred.
I'd say it maybe 180, 200.
I think it's the way that they split the ballrooms up and that they did it more length, like widthwise instead of lengthwise. So they couldn't get the proper amount of depth to add more seats. That's really what the trouble was.
They also had a very wide stage that they did not need because nobody used it, which we'll talk about the stage and the lighting and everything in a little bit. But that was the first thing I noticed, was just how small the room was. They had actually allotted chairs on either side of the stage, which was basically set up in a U shape around the stage, the seating was. So the main length was for normal people, for attendees to watch. The two areas on the sides of the stage were meant for the competitors as soon as they got off the stage. They were meant to go into the seats. None of the competitors used the seats. So they had all of this open seating that attendees could have been sitting in. They could have let more people in. All of the cosplay competitors basically just got up and then stood in the back of the room, or they went and sat at the back of the room because there were more empty seats back there too. They could have let more people in. Again, they did not check badges for anyone to get in. They didn't. So there were people sneaking in during rehearsal to get primo seats, and they sat there and watched until finally cosplay staff noticed and kicked them out. But even then, they could have just walked right back in because nobody was checking badges. And when they finally did seating, which they still didn't check badges for, they just had people in line and they just told them where to go. They didn't even look. They told people, you know, go sit in the order that you're in line. Don't skip seats. Don't go elsewhere. Just go where you're directed to. People didn't listen. People just sat wherever they wanted in the auditorium.
Of course they did.
They switched seats all over the place. And it was just like, oh, great. If I would have known that, I would have chosen a different place to stand to film the contest, because I was not in a great, there was not a great place for press to stand in that room. There really wasn't.
Nope.
Lighting was abhorrent. Completely abhorrent. Both on stage and over the stage, because they used what they call mood lighting in hotels. They basically had these specialized, almost EL chandeliers that had LEDs that kind of make it simulate stars, little amber colored stars. Amber isn't golden. So it was very dim, very, very dim and very yellow. And then, of course, to compensate for this, on the stage, they blasted white and yellow light so that it was very warm colored. The only problem is they didn't aim it and match it up, because basically if you stood in one part of the stage, you were well lit. If you stood any further back, you had shadow everywhere. And it was really hard to see detail if you were at a distance, like when you're filming on a camcorder.
Or when you're up front taking photos and the person moves too close to the front of the stage. Oh, look, you're completely white now. I can't see you. I can't focus anything. Autofocus not work.
A white costume. You blended in if you were in a white costume. And what I noticed, and this may be something for the cosplay staff to consider, there were no X's on the stage.
No.
There were no positional markings saying pose here, pose here, pose here. I would suggest that. Because not only can you have someone stand and check for good lighting, but you also kind of anchor the cosplayers that are anxious and haven't done this before, because it gives them something to latch onto. Okay, I know I have to stand here. Okay, I know I'm walking here and I'm going to stop here. It gives them consistency and structure. And a lot of the newer cosplayers need that. So that is what I would say, at least as far as the stage goes. Again, nobody danced across the entire stage. The only group that used it was the Sleeping Beauty group. And even then, they didn't use all of it. They probably could have cut the stage in half widthwise and still had more room for more seats and not had people standing out in the back. So logistics problem aside, because after talking to cosplay staff later, they had logistics issues that were completely out of their control that basically messed with the cosplay contest. Not going to address those. Halftime show went well until there were a couple of issues with the video.
Mm-hmm.
And then they suddenly had attrition. bunch of people got up and walked out. So there weren't really that many people who stuck around to see the winners, which made me feel very bad. We should be supporting the winners no matter who they are and all the contestants at the same time. Stick around for the end, guys. Seriously, please stick around. You supported them all the way up to this point. It's another 10 minutes in the seat. They really did run efficiently.
10 minutes may vary from con to con.
I mean, for this one specifically.
This one, yeah, they took them maybe about 15 to 20 minutes, I would say.
Yeah, they ran fairly efficiently. They started late because apparently prejudging ran late. Mm-hmm. So everything just kind of shifted forward. But they still ended well in advance of their scheduled time. I think they were at least a half hour early, if not more.
Definitely more than that. I think we had initially planned to have our dinner to us by like, what, 8:30 or something of that sort? Yeah, and we figured, okay, if the contest lets out at 8, that still gives us 30 minutes buffer time. We got out before 7:30. So I was like, okay, I'm cool with this.
Yeah. And the contest was scheduled to end at 8. So we had at least a half hour's extra buffer time. And they still ended perfectly. So kudos on that. The usual issues with people sprinting across the stage. That will probably happen at every con, at every contest. We still highly encourage people. If you were in the ANT contest and you're watching this, please, for the love of all that is holy in cosplay, as photographers and videographers, we want to take good pictures of you. But that means you have to stop in place and not move. We understand that you want to do multiple poses, and that's cool. But you have to give us at least 3 seconds minimum to take a good shot. Some photographers can do it in less, but for the average person, to make sure the camera is steady and whatnot and to get focus, you need 3. And make sure, please, that you count a full 3 seconds and not 1, 2, 3, go.
Say the Mississippis as slow as possible, because it really does add up to a full second when you say one Mississippi. 30 seconds is a long time. And I have to say, from past years, and last year they did a really good job about staying slow on the stage. So I was like, I got photos of every cosplayer. Woohoo! You know what? They did comparably as well. There are always going to be one or two people who just zoom across, and that's just how it is. I mean, no matter how many times you tell them to slow the fudge down, they still don't do it. But I do appreciate the cosplayers who took their time and really utilized those 30 seconds. It's okay to do it, guys.
I think it may have helped, and I know they really didn't have time for this because everything was running behind. Having a quick walkthrough of the stage, I think, would have helped some of the newer people. Because basically, they ended up gathering everyone together, they put them in numerical order, and then they started. There was no rehearsal. They basically told them how it was going to work, and then they went. I think that really quick stage walkthrough and having the X's on stage would have helped them a lot.
The X's definitely would have helped them a lot. Though I do appreciate Bonner demonstrating for everybody. That was enjoyable.
That was hilarious. They did a mock-up demo of how you're supposed to walk across the stage with one of the cosplay helpers.
He did a fantastic job.
All right. So I think pretty much everyone who watched agreed that the prizes were well-earned and correctly given. There wasn't any favoritism shown, in other words. There wasn't any nepotism. The people who won deserve to win. The bubble wrap.
We need to make this part of our halftime show, or I think of like prizes, like fudge doing the restaurant cards. Let's just buy a bunch of bubble wrap.
This was one of those things where they were having technical issues at the time. They were basically trying to buy time for the judges to finish deliberating since the halftime vids ended early, unexpectedly, and that was when they started having retention issues. So basically, they had a whole bunch of bubble wrap from the prize boxes, from the actual physical boxes the prize were sitting in, because they were sitting in just big cardboard boxes for transport. So they took out all the bubble wrap, and they started shredding it and then throwing it at the audience members left and right. And there was just therapeutic bubble wrapping going on in the audience during halftime.
Why not? It kept people's attention.
It did.
Even Napoleon Dynamite got some, so there you go.
The last thing that I wanted to say on the cosplay contest was that I did feel bad for VIPs. Because normally what they would have done, which they did at the dealer's den, VIPs are supposed to be allowed in early or they get to sit up front because they pay for the privilege of being a VIP. They didn't check badges at the cosplay contest, so the VIPs didn't get to sit up front. They didn't get to line up first either, which would have put them in front. So I did feel really bad for the VIPs that didn't actually get to exercise their badge rights that they paid for. Yeah. All right, so that's all I have about the cosplay contest and about Saturday in general, unless you have something to add.
The only thing I wanted to add is if people haven't seen it, it is available on our YouTube page. We also have a version of it on our Facebook page because YouTube is being a giant jerk lately about their copywriting issues. One of the songs that was done by the skit, which was a Napoleon Dynamite skit, got tagged by us. So 190 countries could not view this video. I have fixed it since then. But however, that segment of the video is muted. And it's like, well, what's the point? You need to hear the song for him to do the dance. It's just kind of how it all goes together. So if you want to see the full cosplay contest, I strongly recommend that you visit our Facebook page. It'll be the very first video that you see there. You cannot miss it. Otherwise, you can see the quote-unquote edited version on our YouTube page. And it was still a good contest. We did the best that we could given the restrictions of where the layout was, how we could film and all that. But it was still a good contest, and we still enjoyed ourselves.
Indeed. And in the future, because YouTube is being so restrictive on their copyrights and their takedown notices, if for some reason you guys see a video of ours and for some reason you can't view it, if it says it is restricted in your country, please send us a message and let us know, because YouTube doesn't always email us to let us know that we've had a takedown notice. And we can upload them on our website using our own web storage so that you guys can continue to watch it without having to worry about censorship.
Yeah.
We want you guys to see the whole thing with the music that played during the actual performance.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where I think for the future, the walk-ons typically don't use like pre-recorded music. Well, what am I saying? Copyrighted music. Usually it's like free stuff. So the walk-ons are typically okay. It's the skits that tend to get us into trouble. So the future, it may be that I just put the walk-ons on YouTube only, and then the entire contest will be on Facebook as well as our website. So it's just something we got to do, unfortunately, because YouTube is being YouTube.
All right, final day, as we are actually running really long on this podcast.
It was a lot to talk about for ANT, because it's just one of those things where I think both Amber and I felt like there could be a lot of potential for this to be a really great small con, but they have so many little issues that they need to address and fix. Otherwise, they're just going to see a massive backlash from the community.
And these issues are coming back on a multi-year basis, because we have addressed a lot of these in the past, and they have not been fixed.
It's still the same issues. It's still the same song and dance. And it's like, okay, we got to get these fixed, guys.
So final day, basically, we wanted to make sure that we got our luggage out early because of the lack of elevators. Since there are only three and it's Sunday and it's checkout day, everyone's going to be wanting to use the elevators. So basically, we had our stuff out by 10:30 in the morning. There was nobody around in the hotel. Apparently everybody got hungover at the dance party that ran the night before. About that dance party.
That kept me up all night long. That's the one downside of being on the fourth floor.
They had it so loud, and the hotel is so not soundproofed, that you could hear the dance party music standing in the shower. Like, the room was vibrating. No joke. So either they had the music up too loud, or the Hilton really needs better soundproofing if they intend to host conventions that have a need for loud sound systems. Because I didn't hear it, but it's probably because I was so dead tired that I was out of it and just didn't hear anything.
I had earplugs in and I could still hear it. It was that bad.
Though I did want to sit there in the shower and sing "The Internet is for
Prawn."
Yes. From Avenue Q, just to see how many people were around and would scream at it. Scream in the appropriate places where they're supposed to, since the walls were not soundproofed.
That would have been really funny. We should have just done a sing-along on our floor.
We could have, given the lack of soundproofing.
Yeah.
All right. So basically, we had our luggage. They had a luggage holding area. The problem was that the holding area, which was basically behind their main podium that was in the center of the lobby, was in a giant open area. There were no walls around it.
It's very public. And it's like, oh, that's not good.
I mean, there were pillars and one side had a display, but there were two full sides open out to the public. And the luggage holding area was at the backs of the people who were supposed to be watching it. So unless they turned around constantly, anyone could have walked over and just nabbed something. I mean, it doesn't seem like much. But if somebody reached over and grabbed your prized poster that you had budgeted for 3 months for, that you finally found at this convention, and they just stole it, you'd be pretty pissed off too. I mean, it didn't happen to me because I didn't buy anything in the dealer's den. But for those that do have this happen, it can be devastating. They need a more secure area to hold luggage. Yes, there was a lot of luggage. I know. I saw all of it. They can put up some sort of barriers there. They can get little folding rent-a-barriers or something. Something to keep random people from just walking up and nabbing something. Because they could have. All right, so basically there wasn't as much to Sunday because of the sudden road closures that everybody was going up against.
Yeah, it was both basically just us sitting in panels about two of them so we could make sure that we got as much as we could for cosplay content before we had to jet out. I mean, otherwise we would have been stuck down there for 10 p.m. and
given
that I worked down there, I kind of wanted to go home before I had to trek out there again in the morning.
And I had to get ready for work the next day. And it was still a good 2-hour drive for me. So basically we did what we could in terms of filming panels. Turnout was still decent for a Sunday morning, even though the panels were basically scheduled against checkout time. Still a decent amount of people that attended, and I think part of that is because they had the luggage holding area. There was a place to put your stuff, so that you could still check out and not have to worry about suddenly loading your stuff in your car. Alternatively, you could have had valet, summon your car and then load it and then have them drive it back, but it was just a lot more convenient to put it into the luggage holding area. Especially since that way you didn't have to deal with valet.
Yeah, because I really don't want to deal with that valet ever again.
So basically, like Val said, we filmed what we could. I ended up having to leave a little bit on the early side because I had things I had to get done that day.
Right.
And she filmed the final panel. And then basically we went home and that was it. That was the end of ANT. They had closing ceremonies and they had a feedback panel. They were at 4 o'clock on Sunday when everyone else was gone. Having those road closures just screwed them over. For all the people that I know wanted to give them feedback. There were dealers that left early. There were artists that left early from the artist alley so that they wouldn't get trapped. Dealer's Den was supposed to be open till 4. All those people had to pack up and leave 2 hours early to make sure they got out by 3 o'clock. Otherwise, they would have been stuck until 9. So they just lost out on 2 hours revenue. And they weren't happy about it, those who had to pack up early. And I would have loved to give the con my feedback, by word of mouth, by actually saying it in the room. But nobody could have stuck around that long unless they already had the hotel room and had the next day off of work. It was ludicrous. I mean, that was terrible scheduling on their part. And when I posted on their Facebook and basically said, hey, for those who can't attend it due to the road closures, what do we do with feedback? And their response was basically, oh, well, you can post here on Facebook or you can send us an email. You mean the email that nobody answers and the Facebook that nobody responds to? It's not a great way of doing feedback, guys. Otherwise, we would have done it long before now.
And
there
I think
has
if
to
I
be
remember,
a better way.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, somebody also posted that they were supposed to send out an email for feedback, that there's going to be like this little survey that you can file and all that. Fine. It's been 2 weeks. I haven't seen
it
squat.
Was for those who registered.
We registered. We officially registered.
Well, I'm saying that it didn't go out to everybody. It was only for those who registered at the con. So
we registered at
that
the con.
That being said, we still haven't gotten squat.
We haven't gotten squat. And I gave him the right email address because I saw the registration confirmation in our email.
Right. So it was just... So long story short on this, you know, TLDR, I do not plan on returning to ANT until these issues are addressed, particularly the press issues, the communication issue, number one.
That's the key.
And a lot of the hotel issues.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they basically overhaul those three things for next year, it's basically going to become an anime fest for me. And it really has become an anime fest to where I loved going in the beginning. And then it just really degraded quickly. And I have no desire to go back. I really don't. I mean, I love seeing friends, but not at that venue. It's not worth my time. It's not worth my money. And I certainly don't want to be giving the Hilton that kind of money for what I got.
I'm going to have to 100% agree with you on that one. And honestly, if the guest list didn't include Quantum Destiny, I probably would have strongly reconsidered it. But the second that I knew that she was going to be there, I was like, I have to meet this girl. I need to interview her for the podcast, even though it's mostly for my fangirl happy self. I have to do this. And I think even still with all the problems, a lot of the panel content that we got has been fantastic. It's one of those things where, and I mentioned this earlier in the year, and I think I did this for the 100th episode, actually, where one of the top three most viewed videos on our YouTube was Altair Heidi's leatherworking panel from Anime North Texas, I was about to say A-Fest, 2014. And I was like, that says a lot. We get a lot of really great panel content from ANT. So even with all of these issues, we know that we've got something out there. And based on the number of views of the panels that we've posted, people really appreciate that. So I'm glad that we have that. And I'm glad that we were still able to meet friends and still able to hang out with people. And there's some good to take away from it. But it is reaching that level of A-Fest quality where things are just not getting fixed. There's a lot of repeat problems, and it's been the same problems for the past 3 years. And you can't use the excuse of, oh, we're a small convention, we just don't have as many people. I get that life is a priority. But if you make the commitment to a convention, you also got to make that commitment to actually do your job and to update the schedules properly and to ensure that everything runs smoothly. Because as Amber mentioned earlier in this episode, you know, 1 to 2 weeks out before a con, you should be in autopilot mode. Everything should be ready to go. If an emergency pops up, you already know how to take care of it. There shouldn't be this last minute scrambling.
Yeah, and I know that there were people who had submitted panels who did not find out until at the convention itself that their panel had been approved.
That is insane. That is insane.
So while we did get fantastic content, it's possible that we could have gotten even more content if there had been communication with the panelists who submitted panels. And I was considering submitting panels to them. No, I can't. Not
glad you
did. Good conscience. I can't. And I have a lot of respect for those who run conventions. I have been convention staff before. So I know what it takes to run one. I have for many years known what it takes to run one. And I have a lot of respect for that. But I can't support an organization that has these kind of problems that have been very publicly pointed out to them that are simply being ignored. There are very clearly not fixes being put in place. I could see if they were trying and that didn't work. I get that. I see no effort whatsoever, and I just cannot throw my support behind it financially. So unfortunately, you know, I do not plan to return to ANT next year or in subsequent years until those big things are fixed. And I won't even be there as an attendee. I will not go. And I know that it probably seems like, you know, they sound petty. They sound like they're trying to punish the convention. What's one person not attending going to matter? That's not the point. The point is that we're using this as a public platform to try and get them to realize you have potential. You can be a greater convention than this. You can do it. here are suggestions on how. And if they're not going to take that seriously, then there's no reason for me to be there to support it anyway, because they're not taking us seriously as attendees. And as someone who has helped start a convention, if you don't have attendees, you don't have a con. That's it. It's very black and white. You don't have a con unless you have people wanting to go to it and pay money. So I really do hope that if any of them are watching, or if anyone is watching who knows ANT staff personally, I would hope that they would urge said staffers to take our suggestions seriously. We're not saying you have to do them all. Just take them seriously, at least. And take a good hard look at your communication structure. And please address those issues so that, you know, we can return and we can recommend that everybody else return too.
We have multiple examples of the communication issue. I know that's just not possible since we're already running over extensively late on this one. Woohoo! That we can't really go over one all of them. But I know one that stuck out in my mind was they were looking for Kat, who is the cosplay coordinator, essentially. She's the guru of all the cosplay stuff at ANT. And it was to help with one of the panels. And staff member was like, well, who's the cosplay coordinator? And I was like, you should probably know that as a staff member. It just seems like that should be the obvious thing. And I gave her her name, and she was like, I don't know who that is. I was just like, oh my God. Head desk. I immediately pulled out my cell phone and was like, let me text her. It's just like, it's simple things like that. It's when you know that your staff has to have contact with the managers of the departments that they're running. I mean, it's little things like that that can really tear a convention apart. So if there's anything from all of this that you need to take away, communication, that has to be the key thing that needs to be fixed. Not just between your staff members and within all the departments, but communication with the convention and the attendees. Every aspect of communication needs to be addressed because there's just something lacking.
Many things lacking.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because we actually, given the past 2 years at ANT, we had high expectations for this year.
Mm-hmm. We really did.
They were not met.
Because we kept running into the same issues we've had for the past 2 years.
And new ones with the new hotel location. Things that are basically inherent to that location and not necessarily things that the con did. So, yeah, that's ANT for you. I know it sounds like a giant downer, but they just have a lot that needs to be addressed. That's all. Like we said, all constructive criticism, all meant in respectful suggestion that they take a look at these things. All right. So on that note.
Okay, we need to do something positive at the end. Again, I want to repeat that all the panel content was really, 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 really good. So please go check out our YouTube page. None of that has been blocked by any countries yet because they don't use copyrighted music. So check those out because you will get some really great content out of that. There you go. We like the panels.
And watch the Napoleon Dynamite skit.
Yes, you have to. It's the best skit ever. Ben is 100% accurate about that.
All right. So on that happier note, we will see you guys next episode in 105. Make sure to check us out on all of our social media, which you can, of course, find here where Val is pointing.
Where Val is pointing right now. There we go. We can do the swap there. All right, you can talk again.
Thanks. And of course, if you guys have comments, questions, concerns, suggestions, compliments, concerns of any kind, whether it's ANT or about the podcast, then you guys can email us podcast@cospod.org, which we have had for the last 4 years.
Woot.
We're about to go into our fifth. So we will see you guys in episode 105. Happy holidays. Take care, everybody.
Deuces.